Your Honors, I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my argument for rebuttal at the end. This case presents the narrow issue of the interpretation of the word post. It could also be published, but in this case, the Larkspur Charter required posting instead of publishing. The question is whether the word post, as set forth in the Larkspur Home Rule Charter, requires posting in full, including the legal description of property to be annexed and zoned, when that legal description is incorporated into the ordinance by reference. It is the appellant's view that the definition of area to be annexed and zoned, as stated in the Val de Gore case, is of critical importance, and the absence of the legal description from the posting renders the ordinance ineffective. In this case, Ordinance 3101, which annexed and zoned, ostensibly annexed and zoned certain property, was passed on December 17, 2009. It's undisputed that it was posted after apparently final adoption without the legal description. Now, the legal description was critical of importance to this ordinance. The property to be annexed and zoned was not described in the ordinance. The appellants again requested that the ordinance be posted in full on May 18th, and that was declined. Section 3.20 of the Larkspur Charter requires posting and says no more than that. It says that after an ordinance is adopted, it must be posted.
What's the purpose of the
posting? I believe the purpose of the notice is, the purpose of the posting is twofold, Your Honor. It's number one, to make a final recitation of what was done by the City Council, and it satisfies the due process requirement of putting interested parties on notice of what was actually accomplished by the City Council in this case. And without, it's like they posted one half of the required document and not the other half. The text of the ordinance is without significance, without regard to the legal, and the legal is without regard, or is of no significance without the text of the ordinance to go along with it. In our opinion, the appellees have made much of the fact that the appellants in this case participated in much of the process before the City Council. And the district court apparently felt that, looking at the totality of the circumstances, that the participation of the appellants rendered the lack of posting ineffective. However, in our view, the totality of the circumstances is not the appropriate test to be applied here, as set forth by the court in the town of Russell versus the City of Central. Participation in the proceedings didn't relieve the city from strictly complying with the notice requirement. And we believe that strict compliance is mandated in this case for several reasons. This is not a case of an insignificant departure, as the courts have looked at in many cases. When, for example, two legal descriptions were incorporated, only one of which was right, the courts have said, well, that's substantial compliance, that's okay. It's not a question when an impact report in an annexation, an impact report did not have recommendations of a planning commission, for example, attached to the ordinance. The courts have said, well, that's insignificant and immaterial, and it only requires substantial compliance. And there are many cases, and you've had many of them cited here, by both sides, where insignificant issues were disregarded by the court, and substantial compliance was held to be the test. But in this case, it's our opinion that strict compliance is required. And we have provided you with a significant number of cases from other jurisdictions where the absence of the posting or publication of a map or a legal description which was incorporated within the text of the ordinance was held to be a fatal defect and rendered the ordinance ineffective.
Mr. Berkowitz, sometime in your presentation, would you spend just a couple of minutes and talk about why you think we have jurisdiction to hear this matter?
Well, I think jurisdiction was clearly set out, Your Honor, in the Valdivor case. And I think the court completely answered the question of jurisdiction here. Certainly the annexation statute itself has limitations and says that claims have to be brought within a certain period of time. But that statute assumes an effective and appropriately published or posted ordinance. And that did not occur here. Now, in Valdivor, the court said it was an ineffective ordinance. The legal description that was involved in that case was just wrong. And the court held that notice hadn't been given and the ordinance was ineffective. Since it was ineffective, the challenge period never started. The challenge period as set forth in the annexation statute has never run.
So in this case, though, Mr. Berkowitz, notice was clearly given over a number of months of the applicable legal description, correct?
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
So does that distinguish the Valdivor case by saying that it dealt with due process concerns, lack of adequate notice, whereas this one is simply whether there's substantial compliance with the charter provision?
Well, there certainly is a distinction. There are distinctions in every one of these cases. The facts are always somewhat slightly different. But again, in the city of Central, the court said that the party's participation in the process up to that final point didn't make any difference. The charter requires posting, and in our opinion, strict compliance with that requirement is required, and that the full legal description would have to be incorporated in the ordinance or else there is no adequate notice. Now, our appellants happen to have participated in various parts of the proceedings, but there are many people who wouldn't have participated at all in the proceedings, and they would have no way of knowing what property was to be consumed without the legal description attached. There was no notice. This was inadequate notice of what the city council actually accomplished. Now, in the proceedings leading up to that point, there could have been changes in the legal description that would not have been noted and would not have been provided to anyone who had any interest in the proceedings.
Mr. Berkowitz, when someone makes a challenge under 3112.116, aren't they, to some extent, always challenging the effectiveness of the ordinance?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. They may be challenging the evidentiary sufficiency of the annexation. I think in that case, it's more akin to a Rule 106 proceeding. Clearly, a challenge under that section is brought pursuant to Rule 106 of the Rules of Civil Procedure. As you all are well aware, that requires a presentation as to whether or not there's sufficient evidence to support the decision of the City Council the zoning. This is not that challenge. This is a challenge to the effectiveness of legislation. And without the legislation becoming effective, the provisions under 3112 never come into effect, and that was the holding of Valdivor.
Does this qualify as a collateral attack, though, on the annexation, whether or not you postured it that way, whether or not your declaratory judgment action and mandamus action is postured that way? It still is a collateral attack on the annexation ordinance because that's the effect of it, is it not?
I don't believe so, and I believe that answer was also provided in Valdivor when the court said it is not a collateral attack because the ordinance never became effective. Thank you very much.
Good morning. May it please the court. I view the question before the court as somewhat broader than my learned opponent. The question before the court is who, when, and under what conditions annexations in Colorado may be challenged. In particular, the annexation of the Bearview property, which, as the court is aware, was annexed after multiple publications in multiple newspapers, all of which included the description of the property, Exhibit A, after multiple mailings that included the description of the property, after posting of the property, after 23 public meetings between the Planning Commission and the Town Council, And then, after a year-long process, more than a year-long process, unanimous approval of the Fairview annexation by the town council. The legislative intent of how annexations are to be challenged and how annexations are to be treated is clear. Section 116 of the statute says only certain people can directly challenge it, only those who own land within the annexed area. None of the appellants here are landowners within the annexed area. It can only be challenged for a limited period of time, for 60 days. And after that, as the CML, the Colorado Municipal League pointed it out in their brief, and as this court recognized in its request for supplemental briefs, after that, there is to be no collateral or direct attack on annexations. The trial court's ruling in this case is consistent with those fundamental underpinnings of how annexations are to be treated under Colorado law. It's consistent with the statute, it's consistent with the cases. I do want to touch on two of the questions that were asked by the judges. One was, what's the purpose of this post-adoption posting provision in the Larkspur Charter? Mr. Berkowitz suggested it is twofold. It is for due process purposes and to let the people know what the council did. I respectfully disagree. The due process considerations are taken care of before council makes its decision primarily. Due process requires notice and an opportunity to be heard. There was so much notice in this case and so many opportunities to be heard, 23 meetings, that there can be no doubt as to due process. The only purpose of the post-adoption provision in the town charter is the other reason that Mr. Berkowitz mentioned, which is to let the public know what the council has done. Under the circumstances of this case, there can be, and the trial court recognized, there could be no doubt as to what the council had done. After this lengthy notification process, after these multiple meetings, the description of the Fairview property never changed. So everyone had noticed that this was the property we're annexing. Notice after notice, meeting after meeting. All that the post-adoption posting provision of the Larkspur Charter did in this case was to tell the public, you know the Fairview property we've been talking about for the last year, we've annexed it. And the ordinance did that. So, for reasons we've explained in our brief, the proper standard is substantial compliance, and the posted notice certainly did that. The other question had to do with Section 116, Subpart 4, and the jurisdiction question that the court raised. With regard to the jurisdiction question, it prohibits both collateral and direct attacks. I would respectfully suggest that this is a direct attack on the annexation ordinance, not even a collateral attack, because it seeks a declaration. If you look at the prayer for relief in the complaint, it seeks a declaration that this ordinance is invalid. That's the very essence of a direct attack. But in any event, it is at least a collateral attack, and it goes back to those fundamental underpinnings of how annexations are to be treated. And they're treated that way with good cause. And can you imagine for a moment if we're talking about the annexation of the Park Hill neighborhood to Denver in the late 1800s, and everyone knew this was the property that was being annexed, and it's annexed. And then 100 years later, someone finds out that, oh, the legal description of Park Hill was not attached. What will have transpired in that meantime? All the taxes that were paid based on the assumption that Park Hill was in the city and county of Denver, all of the infrastructure that was extended, the water lines, the sewer lines. That's the reason the legislature says, look, if it's an annexation, we're going to give it a lot of protection. The trial court's decision in this case does just that. Now, there are two issues that I want to, well, there's really one issue that I want to briefly touch on now, because Larkspur has not had an opportunity to do that until now. In the arguments in front of the trial court and in their opening brief, the appellants never raised two arguments that they raised for the first time in their reply brief. They raised an argument based on the derogation of the common law, the zonings and derogation of common law. They raised an argument, it's Latin, and I probably won't even pronounce it right, but it relates to in pari matria. I would respectfully request that the court disregard those, because the case law is well settled that issues that are not presented to the trial court should not be considered for the first time on appeal. If, nonetheless, this court considers those issues, neither are relevant here. The whole concept of being in derogation of the common law relates to, if I own a piece of property and a zoning ordinance says you can only use it for certain things, or it can only have a building of certain height, that limits my ability to do with my property as I could have at the common law. So I, as the owner of that property, have the right to require that those limitations be strictly construed. That has nothing to do with this case. The owner of the property here, the owner of the Bearview property, is not seeking to challenge it. They're the ones that asked to be annexed. The appellants are not owners of property that is subject to some zoning limitation. So the whole concept of zoning laws being in derogation of the common law simply is not applicable. The doctrine of peri materiae is also not applicable here. In support of it, the appellants cite, first of all, the statute that relates to publication of city ordinances, and expressly says on its face it doesn't apply to towns. They also cite to a statute that relates to an option that towns are given to either publish ordinances in full or by title only. So the reference in that statute that talks about publication in full is merely to distinguish it from publishing it in title only. Again, has nothing to do with this case. What this case is about is the fundamental law in Colorado, which is, if it is a legislative matter at the local level, the basic rule, and the Municipal League did an excellent job in their brief of laying out those cases, is that it is presumed to be a standard of substantial compliance, not strict compliance. If you combine this fundamental precept that local legislation is to follow a substantial compliance standard with some of the case law we cited, and you find that it's consistent with the statutes, it's consistent with the legislative intent, and it's consistent with the case law. Even if you look at the standard that's applied to state statutes, as the Grand Oak case did, the standard that should be applied to this particular charter vision is substantial compliance. Grand Oak tells us that you look at the consequence for noncompliance. This charter provision does not specify a consequence for noncompliance. It says you also look at whether this sections or other sections provide for substantial compliance or provide for strict compliance. None of the sections that relate to publication by the town of Larkspur address either of those issues. So it's really a non-factor. And then the third factor under Grand Oak is whether or not this charter provision has a provision in there that says, what happens if you don't comply? Can you only not comply if you show good cause? There's no such provision in this charter provision, so there is no basis to apply a strict compliance standard. So whether it's under the, I guess you would call it the Colorado common law, that local legislation is subject to a substantial reliance standard, or whether you apply the Grand Oak analysis to this particular charter provision, the outcome is the same. This is a substantial compliance question, not a strict compliance question. And whether or not this provision, which is intended to tell people what the council has done, the completed act of the council, whether it was substantially complied with, can't be disputed. The ordinance was posted, telling people expressly, this is the Bearview annexation we're talking about. What the council did is approved it and annexed it. As far as a couple of the cases that the court inquired about, Balbogor is clearly not applicable here. And for the same reason, really, that a lot of the out-of-state cases are not applicable here. In those cases, there was something that would mislead the public, that would mislead a property owner. In Balbogor, it's because the legal description described the section next to the one that was actually being annexed. So people that were actually being annexed could have been misled into not knowing they were being annexed. If you look at all of the out-of-state cases that are cited by the appellants, in each of those, either the zoning map, and it was zoning, not annexation, but either the zoning map was not attached at all, or it was wrong, so that the people would be misled and not know what they were doing. and those cases generally involved due process concerns about people knowing and being able to participate in the process. Far cry from what we have here. Here you have everyone having notice, having the ability, and actually participating in the process. There can be no doubt as to what it means when at the end of the process, council says, we have annexed the Bearview property. The bottom line here is that the legislature has said we protect annexations, and we do so for good reasons. We prohibit any collateral or direct attack on annexations. We limit who can do it. And for all of those reasons, the trial court's decision upholding the annexation of the Bearview property in this instance should be sustained. I'll be glad to answer any questions you may have. Thank you. I assume you won't object then if I sit down a little early.
I'm going to get back for a moment to the issue of collateral attack and direct attack, and remind the court what the court's words were in Val d'Agore. In Val d'Agore, after finding that the definition of the area to be annexed was of central importance, the court goes on to say, because Ordinance 13, the ordinance number there, did not become effective, the 45-day filing period did not begin to run. And that's one of the questions you asked earlier. And by the way, I would note an error in our response. We say it was 45. The statute has now been changed to 60 days. But when the ordinance had never become effective, then the period does not start to run. Now, the question of notice to people after the ordinance was adopted is critical importance for a couple of reasons. Number one is, that's when the referendum rights will start, when it becomes effective. And that is when their rights to challenge the annexation or zoning starts as well. Without the effective ordinance, those time periods do not begin to run. And for that very reason, this is not a direct or a collateral challenge on the ordinance. But the parties, many of the cases we have cited from outside Colorado, have faced that exact issue that Mr. Krob was discussing. There may have been notices of hearings prior to the final action by the town board or the city council, but the action of the town board or the city council could change what was actually done. And parties will have no notice of what was actually done unless the ordinance is published in full. It is not exactly correct to say that there is no ramification to failing to publish. The Larkspur Charter is pretty clear that publication is required, and without that publication, no action has been taken. It is true, this is not a situation that the statutes have a number of situations where publication does not have to include an attachment. Those are situations where a town has approved publication by title only after final adoption. That's not the case in Larkspur. They have no such provision. This is not a case where a standard code is adopted and you don't have to publish the entire standard code. That is an exception that's allowed by the statutes. They have none of those things in this case. Without the legal description being attached, there's no notice to anyone of what was finally accomplished by the city council. And that's the important thing to remember in this case. Legals can change, maps can change on final action of a city council or a town board, and the purpose of posting the legal description or a map is to give notice of what was finally accomplished. That did not happen here. Thank you very much.
Both for your arguments this morning. This case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.